Welcome to Chip Chat, an interview series that connects you with technology experts around the issues that industry is focused on today. And now your host, Allison Klein.
Welcome to Chip Chat. I'm Allison Klein. Today, we're very excited to have Dave Patterson, Chair Professor of Computer Science and Director of the Parallel Computing Lab from UC Berkeley. Welcome, Dave.
Thanks for having me here.
You know, Dave, I recently heard you at IDF talking about some research that UC Berkeley was undertaking in the world of cancer. Can you tell us a little bit about the Parallel Computing Lab and what that role has in terms of Berkeley's broader research objectives?
The Parallel Computing Lab was created to address the multi-core challenge. We've been doing that for three-ish years. It's a five-year project. One of the things we did in the PAR Lab and the AMP Lab, two labs I'm involved in, is to reach out to people with real problems, where we go to experts on the Berkeley campus or nearby, tell us your problems, and we try and build computers and software stacks that can help them.
Can you tell us a little bit about how you guys approach development of your software to take advantage of multi-core and the types of applications that you're driving there?
If you're familiar with MapReduce, it was invented to make it really easy for normal people to write programs that could deal with thousands of computers. I think at Google they say where MapReduce was created, an employee in the first day can write a program in MapReduce that can use 10,000 nodes. The MapReduce philosophy was to provide a very simple programming paradigm and then infrastructure that will monitor all the jobs and restart them if they're slow, if they crash, restart them, and make that pretty easy to use. So we think that's an impressive technology. There's some things that MapReduce aren't a good match to. The particular programming paradigm doesn't work well with things. We've got work at Berkeley that will handle more jobs more iteratively, that once you get it in memory, it'll use it a lot of times rather than stream through it like the MapReduce approach.
You talked about Google and the way that they develop code for their web scale applications. You've talked about the cloud, and then you're talking about an HPC implementation. So why don't you tell me how all of those things fit together and why you're connecting them from a standpoint of what your end objective is?
A cloud is can be controversial in the HPC community. There's investment in having your own machine. So certainly on the Berkeley campus, there's lots of scientists who have their own machines that they control the horizontal and they control the vertical, right? There's, satisfaction in that. You know, speaking kind of as a California taxpayer as well as a Berkeley faculty member, it's not clear to me that that's the most efficient use of dollars. The fact that in the cloud you could get 100,000 computers for 1 hour seems a lot more useful than one computer for 100,000 hours. And I think science by its nature often has spurts, and the cloud is perfect for the spurts. So you get scheduling so that everything runs simultaneously on thousands of nodes and really efficient communication, which we borrow from the HPC community, but this resilience to failure and things that really happen in the real world at scale from the cloud community and kind of the merging of those things together seems like a rosier future for the data center or warehouse scale computing.
Well, you sit in one of the leading research institutions in the world at UC Berkeley. There are smaller schools that probably have good research that don't have access to the type of computing cycles that even Berkeley has. So there's a great leveler in this.
Yes, the cloud, it's making the HPC democratic access, right? Mm-hmm. Anybody with a great idea can get access to it, right? Anybody with a credit card and a great idea can get access to thousands of machines. I mean, what a wonderfully amazing technological opportunity here. Step one isn't you have to build a data center. If you've got a great idea, you can put it out there and let people use it.
Can you tell us a little bit about what you're doing in terms of cancer research and what kind of results could be driven from this research?
This new project that's just getting started at Berkeley called the AMP Lab, which stands for Algorithms, Machines, People, is tackling what people call the big data problem. So one of the challenges we need going in is where are we going to find interesting big data, just kind of generically, because we want to use that to push our technology. So the actual story here, how we got into it, is UC Santa Barbara invited me to give a talk about the AMP Lab last February, and in May, and I said, oh, we'll surely have solved the big data problem by May. Sure, I'll give a talk. And then April came around. We still hadn't quite figured that out. And so there was this guy in the lab who was from UC San Francisco. And so I talked to him. He turns out he's a medical researcher. He's a medical resident. And before he became an MD and then do his residency, he was a programmer. And so he had this sense of there's going to be this tremendous opportunity around cancer. We know that cancer is a genetic disease. The cost of sequencing human genomes is dropping much faster than Moore's Law. We are just around the corner to be able to do that. This would be a perfect match to the AMP lab. It'll challenge machine learning algorithms. It'll challenge cloud computing. This use of people would be a good use. And it's huge. It's petabytes of information. So that sounded great. A friend of mine said, well, if you're interested in cancer, you should read this book. And there's a book, it turns out it won the Pulitzer Prize for nonfiction, An Emperor of All Maladies. And it's a tremendous book by a medical doctor who's a researcher and a great writer. Gives you the whole history and this tie to genetics and why things might be hopeful. So I gave the talk to Santa Barbara, and I woke up the next day and said, I'm just a beginner in this, but it looks to me like computer scientists, people who are information with data analytics, they're in a position to make as big a contribution to the fight against cancer as biologists. It's plausible that within the 5 years of this project, working with medical researchers at UC San Francisco, you know, we could help real people with the real disease in the next few years. And so we're hoping that what we'll be able to do is help society, help humanity with this really vital problem at the same time as push the state of the art of computing.
So I know that this has to do with genome mapping, and I don't remember if it was in MIT or something else, an article about the cost of genome mapping falling and and moving to, you know, the $1,000 range. Is that correct?
A decade ago, we did the first human genome, $1 billion. Mm-hmm. 2007, that had brought to $100,000. 2009, $10,000. It's projected to be $1,000 next year. What's magic about the $1,000 is that is seen as the thing that would let it become widespread. Mm-hmm. And why that's important is what's considered personalized medicine. Personalized medicine would be, they would know our genomes. What would be the right thing for people with my genetic makeup? And so that's, there's a lot of belief this would be a revolution in medicine. Mm-hmm. The person from UC San Francisco who worked with us, Taylor Sittler, what about the data processing side of that? There was estimates that that'll be many times the $1,000. So a challenge is to use computing technology, use high-performance computing, cloud computing to bring those costs down. So it's not, you know, $1,000 for the wet lab piece and $20,000 for the data processing to bring it down. So it's less than $1,000.
Well, thank you very much for being on the program today. Where can people find out more about your lab?
We have something called the AMP Lab. And I hope if you go in a search engine and put AMP Lab, it'll show up. But it's probably also amplab.eecs.berkeley.edu. One of those two hopefully should work. And, you know, we've got a web page, and there's supposed to be a blog there and publications and stuff like that. I'm also teaching a course right now where we're trying to learn, get up to speed. And so we've got some papers and news things. So maybe if you put those links on your website,
that'd
be easier to find.
Well, thank you so much. It was really inspiring talking to you today.
Well, thanks for inviting me here. I like talking about it.
Visit ChipChat online at intel.com/design/chipchat.htm.